The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Yeah, we experienced it last year with Cork. They were complacent. Their game plan was set up to prepare for another team, as if they were playing Dublin. That's coming from the coaches. So don't talk about they weren't complacent. They were.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at getsetgo.ie.
Football on Off The Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Very good morning to you. Welcome along to yet another episode of the Euro 2020 show here on Off The Ball. Shane Hannan with you throughout the duration of the European Championships. And we've reached the quarter-final stage. We've had 2 days of rest over the last couple of days. And we're raring to go for tonight and for tomorrow. It's going to be very, very decent, the football, hopefully. If it's anything like Monday, we'll be fairly okay. The quality on show has been just superb at the European Championships so far. So we're live at the moment in the usual places, OTB Sports Radio on the OTB Sports app. You can download that for free right now if you haven't already in the App Store or the Play Store. We're also live on video as well, as per usual, youtube.com/offtheball on Facebook and indeed on Twitter as well, at Off The Ball. And as usual, our OTB Sports Euro 2020 show is live with Paddy Power's Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every goal England scored at the Euros. 4 goals scored so far, 3 of them courtesy of Raheem Sterling, and of course 1 from Harry Kane as well against the Germans, and that's €40,000 in the bank so far for Irish football. So not bad at all. Over the coming weeks, a couple of weeks left, I'll be joined by Euros legends, football insiders, some journalists as well. Eamon Dunphy will join myself, Enda Colin, Kieran Bradley very shortly on the Euros 2020 show this morning. First of all, though, I want to remind you of my team of the tournament, my rolling All-Stars, which has been going since the tournament began. So you'll see up on screen there my team from the last day, so from Tuesday. Jan Sommer of the Swiss in goals. We had Dumfries in the Netherlands, Lindelof for Sweden, Thomas Vermaelen for Belgium and Robin Gosens for Germany. Across the back line, then the midfield, fairly strong midfield, I think you'll agree. Ferran Torres of Spain, Paul Pogba for France, Xhaka for Switzerland and Emil Forsberg for Sweden. And then up front, Cristiano Ronaldo, still the top goal scorer, but Patrick Schick of the Czech Republic is creeping down his neck. So the two of those up front. I've made a couple of changes to my team for this morning. Now, you can ignore the formation. So the formation here, of course, is a 4-4-2, but just to bring you my team from today. So Lindelof is out. Victor Lindelof, of course, and Sweden are out of the tournament. Leonardo Spinazzola has come into the defence for myself. Robin Gosens for Germany, another player out of the tournament now, and Alexander Zinchenko for Ukraine is into the team. Very disciplined in his defensive duties for Ukraine the last day against Sweden, and really good goal for himself as well. Crossed in for the equaliser. And Emil Forsberg for Sweden is out in the left in place of Raheem Sterling. Ignore the formation. Some people are going to be saying here, what in the name of Jesus is Leonardo Spinazzola doing at the centre of defence, the Italian? He is not a centre defender, I know that. Let's put this as a 3-5-2. So Dumfries, Vermaelen and Spinazzola on the left, and then Zinchenko will have as a wing back. So before you go accosting me in the YouTube comments, that is my formation. That's what I'm sticking with, a 3-5-2. So that's the decent team. Anyway, time to bring in our other guest this morning, Eamon Dunphy, and the two lads from the hills of Donegal, Enda Coll and Kieran Bradley. They must have got the broadband sorted in Donegal. Morning, lads.
Shane, how are you?
Keeping well, keeping well. Eamon, we'll start with you. I mean, the last time we spoke to you on last Friday's show, you were really, really praying for your own mental health. I think you said that England wouldn't beat Germany, wouldn't go on to win this tournament. I think you said it was just something that we all wanted to avoid seeing Boris Johnson jumping up and down. But are you on the England bandwagon now? Or are you still feeling the same way as you were?
Well, it's over and it's happened. And I think they're going to get to the final. They're certainly going to get to the semi-final because Ukraine picked up a red card the other night and they're not so hard. So England really could play any team and beat them, in my opinion. Then they play the Czech Republic, who they've already... Well, maybe the Czech Republic. Yeah, I think it'll be the Czech Republic. And then they're in the final, maybe to meet Italy, maybe to meet Belgium, I think Italy. If they win it, football will have come home and we won't hear the end of it. But at the same time, you have to, you know, Gareth Southgate would have been savaged if Germany had beaten them. And Thomas Muller missed a real big chance with a few minutes to go to take the game into extra time. He set his stall out to be very conservative with 7 real defensive players and just the 3 attackers. And it's worked. They haven't conceded a goal. Raheem Sterling has played better for England than he played for Manchester City for most of last season. Harry Kane has got his goal. And they have a real chance. There's no doubt about it now. And you have to praise the winners when you get to the closing stages. So I would have doubts about Southgate's bravery, because there's a lot of players. Mason Mount, not in the team. Jadon Sancho, Jack Grealish, none of those guys are in the starting team. So he's winning. He's been vindicated. That's the way football works. And they have a real chance of winning it. I'll get over it.
You'll get over it. Like I was worried myself about the media reaction and the English media reaction to the win over Germany. And looking at the back of the mirror this morning, it's delivered, because like Gareth Southgate was saying, you know, it's a dangerous moment for us, feeling we only have to turn up to win the thing. That's, you know, we've not achieved what we want to achieve yet. So he was keeping quite level-headed. The back of the mirror has a picture of Jack Grealish, an interview with him that says, "We're so good, it's scary." And he goes on to say that myself, Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, Raheem Sterling, Phil Foden, Bukayo Saka, that's scary how good us six are. That's not being big-headed or nothing. That is just the truth. Like, are you enjoying the English media reaction to this, Eamon?
Well, I think they have got some fantastic attacking players. They have been fortunate, you could argue, with the draw. They played all their games at Wembley. Now they play in Rome tomorrow night. But I wouldn't be looking for reasons to, you know, begrudge England what they've got and Gareth Southgate, because it's very much his team and his ideas that are going to be tested. And personally, I'd have gone another way. I think most observers would have played Mason Mount and Jack Grealish. Jadon Sancho, Didi Hamam tells me that he's been sensational for Dortmund in the last two seasons and is a much better player than any other option, attacking option, that Southgate has. But Southgate is doing it his way. And I was around in 1966, I'm afraid. I was at the World Cup final and at the semi-final. And everybody criticised Alf Ramsey for being too negative, for not having his team play expansively, for playing 4-3-3. He was criticised and criticised. They won the tournament. And he was all of a sudden Sir Alf Ramsey. So Sir Gareth Southgate is quite possible.
And
I was one of the critics of Sir Alf Ramsey. I thought they should have been more expansive. But if you win, then everything is vindicated.
Eamon, I was looking at the starting lineup, and you know it did look defensive, and it looked like the wrong lineup if Germany were to get an early goal. But I guess the idea behind it was to, you know, contain Germany as long as they can, and then get them in the second half, which Jack Grealish off the bench changed the game. Yeah. So, do you think Gareth Southgate is actually playing this correctly? And I know one of the criticisms of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was that he always put his best team out there and had nobody to impact the game off the bench. So maybe that's what Gareth Southgate is trying to do here.
Yeah, I think he's decided if we don't concede goals, we've got the players up front, Harry Kane principally, who'll always get us a goal. So his intention has been not to concede a goal. I thought Harry Maguire played really well the other day. I wouldn't be his biggest fan, but I thought he played really well. I think John Stones has played really well. I think Shaw at left back has been outstanding. So there's a lot of good things happening. Declan Rice has played really well, and Phillips has played well. So the question, I suppose, the only lingering doubt is the quality of the opposition they've had to face. I don't think they've had to face a good team in form.
I mean, could I just...
Yeah, sure.
Sorry. I was just wondering, I wonder how far Gareth Southgate's had an influence in making this England team slightly separate from all of the usual nonsense around that comes from the media and comes again from the politicians, as you were saying with Boris Johnson there before. it seems to me that he's a pretty good facilitator for a kind of good environment for the players to kind of express themselves. Do you think that's helped impact how England is seen outside the country as well, though?
Well, I think that there's one thing certain. He's generated a really happy camp. The players are all in it together. You can see the guys who aren't playing on the touchline at the end rushing out to hug the guys. Now, normally, if you're not in the team, you've got the hump. And they haven't. I watched Mason Mount, and his body language after the match the other day was amazing. You know, he was so happy for the guys who played. And that's a massive thing. And for example, France notably didn't have it. Neither did the Netherlands have it. So I think Gareth Southgate, in that side of things, the players like him. They like each other. They behave themselves. They've been very, very well disciplined. So there's a lot of boxes he's ticked. The question in the end, when they play a really top team, and it won't be when they play Ukraine, is do they tick the goal-scoring box? That's the real question. Because apart from Sterling, no one else is looking threatening.
Just on that, Eamon, our own Adrian Barry here on OTB Sports spoke the last day about Harry Kane's lack of performances so far based on his standard, his usual standard, and lack of goals. Is there any danger of him being dropped at any stage if he, for example, doesn't score against Ukraine, doesn't play well against Ukraine, or is he too important in other facets of his game to be dropped?
Yeah, I think the goal he scored the other day, made by Jack Grealish, I mean, it looked like a simple header. It wasn't quite as simple as it looked. That will do him the world of good. I would say, and Roy Keane said it on ITV, he thinks that Harry Kane's move from Spurs and the possibilities of it may be playing on his mind, and I think that may well be right. It's a career-defining move he's waiting for. He doesn't want to stay at Spurs. He's dealing with Daniel Levy, which is never easy. That would be weighing on Harry's mind, I think. But there's no chance of him being dropped. Zero.
There's a couple of that situation occurring at this tournament, Eamon. Mbappe is said to be considering his future at PSG as well, and that seemed to distract him. And when he was hitting that last penalty, you know, maybe his mind was elsewhere. Same with Harry Kane. Interested to get your thoughts on the Jadon Sancho transfer to United, because I mean he hasn't played for England at all this year, so it's interesting that he hasn't actually had that pressure on him at all. What do you make of the move?
Well, at the price, which I think is around 60-70 million, which isn't really, you know, all that much these days, I haven't seen enough of him to give you an informed judgment. But Didi Hamann, who I have great belief in, he's a great judge, Didi. He said he's been absolutely brilliant for the last two seasons in the Bundesliga. And I would trust Didi's judgment. So I think that's a good piece of business by United. And I think they may look to offload some players to get that money back. So if they get money for some of the players they're trying to sell, Jesse Lingard, for example, and a couple of others, then it's good business. And United do need, everybody needs a quality game changer like Sancho. He goes past people. He troubles, he worries defenders. He goes past people. And United need that. Yeah. And also the Glazers need to prove that they're willing to spend money.
I mean, you were saying before, off air, like, that chemistry is really important. And who do you think is a team that you can see growing into this tournament nicely? And who do you think might be a little after the wind in their sails at the minute?
Well, obviously Denmark, and they killed Wales. They have, because of the Christian Eriksen situation and their bond with the Danish fans and with the nation, they played a couple of games at home. There's a massive bond there. The leadership of Kasper Schmeichel has been evident. They have a lot of very, very strong characters in that team. I think they are playing for Eriksen in a way. And we must remember, he's a 29-year-old young man whose career may be over. thank God nothing worse happened on the pitch, but something worse could have happened. So Denmark have that solidity, fervor and belief. I also think Switzerland against France, I cannot explain the transformation of Xhaka from the guy we see at Arsenal, arsing around every week, pointing at other people, kicking people, getting booked, getting sent off. He was man of the match against France. So as the Swiss have really had a transformation, a dramatic one, and the Czech Republic. I thought the Czech Republic were really outstanding against the Netherlands last Sunday. I really, really did. So all of those three teams have definitely, and of course the Italians came into this with have the most extraordinary record. They haven't lost now for 31 games. He has good players on the bench that he can bring on. Like Locatelli came on as a sub. He scored two goals. He's made goals. He's not in the starting lineup, but what a player to bring on. Spinazzola,
bang on.
He is really good. He is an outstanding player. Now, I prefer him at a left back. If I heard you right, he might be in a back three, but he's a very, very, very good player. Young guy, strong. Insigne, they're not sure to score goals with their frontline strikers. But they play with intensity. Verratti is a real leader. They play with an intensity and a tempo that I haven't seen any other team match. And that's hugely important for them. They're the four teams. The only team you could write off, I'd say, would be Ukraine. All the others have a chance of winning, I think.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point for sure. Before we get into those other games not involving England in more depth, I just wanted to ask you, you touched on Raheem Sterling there a moment ago, Eamon, and like I couldn't help but think after the game, Gareth Southgate's there describing him as a fighter, and you think about this kid who, 15 goals in his last 20 England games, he hadn't scored in 27 England appearances before that, he's really come on as an England international. And when you think about how vilified he has been in the English media, racist undertones to a lot of the coverage around him as well. Like, just how impressive has he been this tournament?
He's been hugely impressive, and he has showed his character as well as the three goals he scored. He hit the post, but he has been busy, and there is a tempo that he injects into the team. It isn't just the goals; it's his movement. It's the uncertainty defenders feel facing up to him. He's not staying in one position. He's not playing wide of the front three. He's moving across the line. He's been hugely impressive, and it's been very, very surprising considering the season he's had at Manchester City. I don't think he played in more than two or three of their last 10 or 11 games. So he's rested more than most players, but he has been most impressive. Yes, he's taken his goals brilliantly as well, and he's injected something into England's play that has been vital. And Gareth Southgate does deserve credit. I don't think I would have played him. I don't think John Giles or anybody, I'd be interested in your opinion, before the tournament started, I would say most people would have preferred Mason Mount or Jack Grealish or Sancho to Raheem Sterling. He'd had a very bad season.
You mentioned the Swiss there in the French game, and absolute madness that game was. And we thought the Swiss were dead and buried. Before that, we thought Croatia were dead and buried. They came back. I mean, the mistake by the Spanish keeper Unai Simon kind of set the tone for the evening in what was an extraordinary couple of games, both of which went to extra time. Like, what were your thoughts on that? Like, is that the greatest one day of international football or football generally that we've ever seen?
Yeah, absolutely draining. I thought Luka Modric was brilliant in that match. And also he was when they played Scotland. And just watching him in the tournament has been really inspiring. He's such a great player. He's such a big heart. And at the very, very end of when they were dead and buried at the end of extra time, he was still pushing, still looking to press the ball, still looking to get on the ball. So, yeah, I mean, it was an amazing day of football. I thought the Swiss and the French were, you know, I mean, 3-1 up with 10 minutes to go against Switzerland with the players France have, and they lost it. And the most exciting young player in the world since the arrival of Messi and Ronaldo, which I think Mbappe is, takes a penalty and misses it. That was really, really dramatic and really surprising.
Eamon, just moving on to the games at hand now, the quarterfinals. We mentioned Harry Kane there earlier. I was looking through the strikers for each team, and, you know, Spain have Morata, England have Kane, Lukaku for Belgium, Chiesa for Italy, yes. Schick, Yarmouk, Dahlberg. There's some really quality strikers left in this tournament. Who do you think's the best, and how important do you think those front men are?
Well, Schick has done really well, very well. I would say the potential for Harry Kane to really have, you know, he's got three games to play, to really, really finish the tournament strongly is there. If he's if his head's right, there are some, you know, most of it though hasn't been brilliant. I mean, Morata, for example, has had a nightmare in many respects, including missing a penalty. But it, to me, it hasn't been star players who've got these teams, most of these teams through. It's the team ethic, the bond, the work rate, the unity, and the cohesion on the pitch, rather than brilliant individual performances. Raheem Sterling, I suppose, has been the most effective striker. He scored three goals. They've been vital goals as well, because there's three out of four that England have got. England keeping clean sheets. It's been that kind of tournament. When Portugal won in 2016, they also kept a lot of clean sheets, and, you know, they weren't scoring hatfuls of goals. So I think Schick is a very interesting striker. Yeah, and a player who I would think will end up in the Premier League.
Eamon, I just wanted to ask a quick one on England and their situation at the moment, and actually how it relates to Ireland in one sense. I think at the moment, when England are bringing through such an enormous amount of players, and they're technically skillful and there's a lot of competition for places, I myself, for example, would come from a mixed heritage background. So some people see themselves as both English and Irish. Now, I do wonder if there's an opportunity for the FAI to start putting the kind of feelers out there for players like, say, Conor Gallagher at Chelsea, who was on loan at West Brom last season. These kind of players who might not have a run at the England team, and it might Ireland benefit from it if Stephen Kenny was able to do so?
Yes, I think Stephen Kenny is different to the last two managers, Martin O'Neill and Capitone. I think Stephen knows where all the Irish players are. He knows who they are. He knows where they are. He knows their history in schoolboy football, or he knows their history in the academies at the clubs they're at. So he knows everything, because he managed the under 21 team, and he takes, you know, he's living here, so he takes great interest in it. The problem, we had Declan Rice. We had him. And he saw, you know, he got involved in John Walters and Harry Arthur and Roy Keane got involved in a fight on the training ground. Declan Rice was watching it. He was standing there watching it. And Keane was abusing the two players. So Rice said, that's it. Now, oh, we could have played Declan Rice at any stage and made him our player, and we didn't. That's down to O'Neill and Keane. Jack Grealish, we were negotiating with him and his father. Now, he may never have been going to come, but Keane said of his father that he was high maintenance. You know, now, we have these players. But to go back to your general point, Kieran, I mean, basically, we do need to look at what the English are doing right the way through their system. And I think we need, and that's why I like Stephen Kenny being manager. We need a relationship between our under-21s, our underage teams, and the senior team. And also, there's a huge issue about whether our best schoolboy players should go to the top Premier League clubs if they're asked, or whether they should go perhaps to the Bundesliga, perhaps to the Netherlands, perhaps to the Championship. Because when the Premier League clubs need a player, they don't promote from within. They go out and sign a check. And that is hurting. It seems to be hurting us a bit. Now, the question that I don't know the answer to, is how come England is producing so many gifted young players? Mason Mount, Sancho, and Grealish. So there's something happening in England, because this is the first generation that's produced so many gifted attacking players. I think, well, it's since Gerrard, Lampard, Paul Scholes, since that generation. So there was a big gap there. And I don't know the answer to that. But I think you're right to identify it as an important issue, an important question.
It's a very fair point, and certainly something Stephen Kenny touched on last night, chatting to Nathan Murphy on Off the Ball about, you know, an Irish team that reflects Irish society, and you have young black players like Chiodosi Ogbene, the first African born to play for Ireland, how important that is. And I suppose, touching on all of that, Eamon, like, when you look at a team like Denmark, you've mentioned, like, Denmark didn't qualify for the last Euros, we were there,
yeah.
And yet their population is, I think, around 5.86 million, fairly similar to ours, and yet they are streets ahead of us, it would appear, at this moment in time, because they look, by all accounts, if they beat the Czechs, they're into a Euros semi-final, and who knows where this will take it. Like, is that frustrating from your point of view to see the Irish team so far behind a country of Denmark's similar size?
Well, one thing we have to look at is the fact that we drew with Denmark twice in recent, within the past, 18 months. We went to Hungary and we drew with, you know, about 8 or 9 players missing. We only lost to Slovakia on penalties, and they were at this tournament. I think we have to be fair to ourselves. We could have been at this tournament, and we could have been competitive if Stephen Kenny had been the manager for the last 3 or 4 years. I think what he's doing now will pay dividends in the next 2 years. Not in time to qualify us for the World Cup, but for the next European Championship, I expect Ireland to qualify. I expect Troy Parrott, Adam Ida, young Connolly, Aaron Connolly, and those players to come through and have an impact. Well, that's my hope. And I think that Stephen understands what Ireland needs to do. And I think the problem with having Martin O'Neill, Roy Keane, and Tardelli, and Trapattoni, they fly in for the senior team. The senior team plays, and then they're gone. We need someone who's here and paying attention all the time. And that's what we have now.
And just on that Stephen Kenny interview last night that I mentioned with Nathan, like, he spoke about the fact that he's sticking to his guns, sticking with his style of football, and talking about players like Darragh O'Shea, who I don't know how many caps he has, maybe 9 or 10 caps at this point in time, but by the next Euro qualifier tournament in Germany, you know, if he plays our World Cup qualifiers upcoming, he'll have, you know, 15, 16 caps by the stage that tournament comes around. So all of a sudden you're looking at all these young guys who have experience. So do you back Stephen Kenny in terms of A, his style of play, and B, giving all these young players a good opportunity?
Yes, I do. I do certainly back him in terms of blooding these young players into international football. I also like the style of play. I mean, nobody's playing that agricultural stuff that we used to play in this championship. Although there was the Germans and indeed England. They did knock quite a few balls forward, and second balls, getting on the second balls, which is the theory, was a factor. I think your style of play largely depends on the players you have, but there's no reason why we shouldn't be, why you should be doing stupid things, giving the ball away all the time, as we did under O'Neill and under Trapattoni. We worked hard to get the ball back, then we gave it straight back to our opponents. I don't think Stephen's teams will do that. I don't think they should do that. And I think he's right about that.
Eamon, I think you've been one of the most vocal people in Ireland when it comes to the style of play and managers almost putting the Irish players down and what they can do. And what.
Yeah.
Do you think this is make or break now for Ireland? Do you think Stephen Kenny will get the patience of the country, patience of the FAI to actually build something here? Because it doesn't happen overnight after spending 40 years playing this type of football. Do you think he will be allowed the time to change the ideals of Irish football?
Yes, I do. I hope he will. I think we have to be realistic. We play Portugal in September, I think, in the World Cup qualifiers. Now, everybody was saying, how can we play Portugal? Portugal weren't very good in this championship. They really weren't. They have a lot of players who are cracking on. Ronaldo's 36, Moutinho's 35, and one or two of the others, big-name players, Fernandes, for example, didn't play well. So we've got to get that idea out of our head that we can't compete with Portugal. We can't. So we can't be going there with a defeatist attitude. But I don't think qualifying for the World Cup is necessarily a realistic goal. Qualifying for the next European Championship, building a good team with the young players that are available. And Darragh O'Shea is a good example. You know, he played really, really well in an unsettled defence. Building that team, having the patience and having the guts that Stephen Kenny has to play young players, to not want a result every time they go out on the pitch. Just remember Troy Parrott and that vital goal that he scored for us. Well, he scored two goals, but the first goal was so important. He showed talent, he showed courage, he showed persistence, and it paid off. We want that kind of attitude, and I think you've got to build that, and you've got to build a group of players, a team. I referenced Southgate before in this regard. He has a team of guys that get on with each other. They all know what their role is, and they go out and they do their business. So I think I'd be optimistic that we will have a decent team over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Here's hoping. We might get back to the action at the Euros, Eamon. We've mentioned Switzerland, Spain, which is 5 o'clock in St. Petersburg later today. That's the first quarter final. And then tonight, like unquestionably the tie of the round, Belgium against Italy in Munich from 8 PM. I mean, you mentioned this the need for harmony off the pitch and this il gruppo idea that Roberto Mancini has instilled in the Italians. And when you look at Belgium, like, while they have been fairly impressive, like, there are question marks over the fitness of Eden Hazard and Kevin De Bruyne heading into tonight. So how do you see this one playing out this evening in Munich?
Well, I think Italy will beat them. I think they're not a team. They're in the collection of individuals. They'll miss De Bruyne, clearly, if he's not fit. And he looked like he did his ankle ligaments the other night, and he's got other injury issues. So I think he probably won't play. Hazard hasn't really been, you know, competitive. He's had two very bad years in Spain. I think he's only played 23 games for Real Madrid. And off-the-field issues concerning his weight and stuff like that. The back three, Alderweireld, Vertonghen in particular, they're old. And I think they're gettable. So I think Italy beat them. I mean, Lukaku's good, but will he get enough ball to be effective? Will he get chances? I'm not so sure he will. I thought Portugal were unlucky not to beat them the other night. I thought over the course of 90 minutes, Portugal had more of the ball, they played better, just didn't convert chances. So I'd be strong that Italy will beat them.
Eamon, yeah, I'd agree. It's probably a battle of the defences this evening. Just with regards to Belgium, a few eyebrows were raised when Roberto Martinez was appointed there.
Yeah.
He'd obviously done reasonably well at Swansea, kind of, you know, not done so well at Everton. Do you think there are some managers, and Southgate probably falls into this category as well, that suit international football better than club football?
Well, it's an interesting thought, an interesting question. I think what you need, yes, they're different jobs. You only have your players for a very short period of time as an international coach, manager, whereas the club level, it's an entirely different deal. You're there living with each other 365 days of the year. I think you probably do, but the one quality you need, and it's absolutely imperative, is knowledge of the game. And knowledge of the game and perhaps the ability in this day and age to deal with players, highly paid players, players who are superstars, players who don't need to be there. And the difference between, say, the Swiss manager and Didier Deschamps, the French manager, French coach, there was absolute mayhem in the French camp. And it was going on all the time. And it was predictable. He didn't manage that. And they paid the price. It wasn't because they didn't have the players. It was because the players weren't a unit. Now, Gareth Southgate is completely the opposite to that. His players are a unit. So it's easier to do that at club level because you can get rid of the troublemakers and you can bring in people with better character. As an international team manager, you can't get rid of anyone because you certainly can't bring anyone in. So you have a squad. So it's a different skill set, perhaps. But the fundamental thing of knowledge, I think, holds. But I think we've seen from our own experience, nobody could say Trapattoni didn't have knowledge. And no one could say Martin O'Neill didn't have knowledge. But Stephen has another thing, which is patience, the ability to work with young players, the ability to be patient with young players, and a belief in them. So he has something that the other two didn't have, although they had things in terms of their long careers that he didn't have. So there is a difference.
Eamon, can I just ask you about Roberto Martinez and that ilk of manager, because I think he falls into the same sort of folder as, you know, Marco Silva, where they're really slick, they're European, they're good looking, they play nice football, but it just does seem that there's a little bit of spoofery about them as well.
Yeah.
What do you think of that? Do you think Martinez is more reputation than anything else?
I agree with you about Martinez. I'm not a fan. Not a fan at all, actually. I think he's had an amazing squad. I think they've spectacularly underperformed. And I think they'll get done by Italy. And I've never really been impressed by his teams. I have to admit here, a deep prejudice. I don't think James McCarthy is a very good player. And Martinez was one of his biggest supporters, promoting him. I think he brought him to Everton, possibly. So I'm not a fan of Martinez, no.
Can a spoofer manager, though, lead a team to a major tournament? Because, I mean, you look at this Belgium team, and you mentioned the age of them, I guess, Eamon, and they are the most experienced. I think they have five players with over 100 caps, certainly the most experienced squad in terms of age at the tournament. If he goes on to beat Italy tonight and the group opens up or the tournament opens up for him, like, is it possible for a spoofer manager to go on and win a major tournament?
It's a great question. I mean, it's funny, I'd be having a drink with John and Liam and Didi often after we'd done our work, and we'd be talking about people in the game who we knew to be spoofers, who are doing well. It isn't really. You would think it's Mancini's a good example. I was never particularly taken with Mancini, but he won two Premier Leagues for for City. And the job he's done with the Italian team is extraordinary. At a time when Italy probably have fewer top players than they've ever had, ever. And yet they have this amazing record. So it's interesting. These are interesting questions. If you've got, I'd say this about spoofers or guys who wouldn't be the most knowledgeable and they want their managing. If you have in your dressing room three or four or five senior pros who know what they're doing and who influence people around them, then let the matter, yes, a spoofer could, a PR man could in theory do it, because the dynamics of success are the training ground. You have to have leaders. You have to have people like Seamus Coleman, for example, and Shane Duffy. You have to have guys who are respected by their teammates. You have to make sure if anyone's creeping out the fire escape at night to meet someone illicitly, that nobody does that, because you've got to make sure that things are right. And often it's the senior players, the Roy Keane, for example, at Manchester United, who was the policeman, if you like, the driver, the manager on the pitch. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment Alex Ferguson didn't know what he was doing, but having Roy Keane on that pitch made Ferguson's job an awful lot easier. And every team needs a leader, and better still, two or three leaders. Generally great players. Giles was like that when he played at Leeds. He, Billy Bremner, Jack, they were all leaders. So you do need that in your camp. Now, a clever manager would know how to get that vibe and culture going on the training ground, in the dressing room, and in preparation for games. And if you look at France and how disappointing they were, well, you can see what's missing there is leadership and character. And that's from a group of players who won the World Cup. So, you know, there are all kinds of variables.
One last one from me. Where shall I send the England shirt? Shall I send it to your house, or to the office? Or?
You can send it to the house, and I'll happily wear it and put Boris number one. and we'll have a bit of fun at our celebration party. I can only imagine what it would be like on the 11th of July, the 12th of July, when England, when football has finally come home. How happy we'll all be.
We'll be delighted. We'll be delighted. Like I mentioned at the start, in the show, obviously here, the Euro 2020 show is with Paddy Power, and this Save Our Game campaign donating £10,000 to Irish football for every goal England score. Like, they're basically, every goal England score is benefiting Irish football. So in some ways, we do want them to do well. Like, how many more goals do you think they can get? Because every goal is good for us.
Well, they should get a couple of goals against Ukraine, maybe three. But to be fair to Paddy Power, they're given £100,000 anyway to grassroots football here, and I believe there's been a big take-up on it. But they've got four at the moment. Three against Ukraine with two games left to play. So they might get to 10, but I think Gareth would have to loosen up a bit. He'd have to chill a bit and throw a few attacking players into the team. And I don't think he's going to do that.
Can I just ask you, Eamon, before we finish up, like, we're talking about spoofers, and I'm not going to call Kylian Mbappe a spoofer, but when you see that last penalty, some people suggesting, yeah, that maybe he wanted the fifth penalty for this ego trip, or he is quite a strong ego, I'm sure. Anyone at that level and that good a player has to have some sort of an ego. But when you see even not many French players coming over to kind of console him after he misses that penalty, yeah, like, was that something that concerned you, or is that just typical of something that happens in the French camp?
No, I think it confirmed that all is not well in the French camp. Whether it's Mbappe's fault or not, I'm not sure. I think Kylian Mbappe needs to go and be tested and play with and against the best players in the world. Whether he does it in the Premier League or in Spain, if he stays playing in the French league, he is not going to become the player he should be. He's 22 now. That is not young. He needs to get out there and not be walking around. I've seen him play for PSG against other French teams, and he's really walking around the place, playing in spurts. He's a brilliant player, but now he needs to go out and he needs to face some challenges. You have to be challenged to be great, and you have to overcome challenges. I don't think he's as challenged and has been in the last 2 years as he should be.
Eamon, great stuff as always. It sounds like your four semi-finalists, you're going for Spain, Italy, Czech Republic and England, am I correct?
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Excellent. Listen, Eamon, we'll check in again.
England, Czech Republic will be playing each other then. So this time, Czech Republic just could be a problem for England.
And then a Belgium, Spain semi, or sorry, an Italy, Spain semi-final. You think the Italians will get through that one?
I do, yeah. I think it'll probably be an England-Italy final, and that'll be great.
Perfect. Well, listen, we'll check in again next Friday, Eamon. You've been great stuff again this morning, so thanks a million for that.
Thanks very much. It's a great pleasure.
Great stuff. Eamon Dunphy there, of course, presenter of the Stan podcast as well. Legendary Irish broadcaster. We'll get to the predictions from Enda and Kieran now for the weekend's games in just a moment. But before we will bring you that, we'll bring you the Paddy Power odds for those games. Four classic games to look forward to. Have a look.
Right, quarterfinals day one on Friday of the European Championships, and we've got a really good doubleheader to look forward to. And Emmett O'Keefe, we're going to start with the 5 o'clock game. It's a clash of the S's, Spain against Switzerland. Switzerland, the conquerors of France, and traditionally these sides don't score too many goals when they've gone head to head against each other in the past.
Yeah, for sure. I think probably another tight encounter could be expected, but I just feel Switzerland's price is slightly too big. Switzerland's price is similar to what Croatia's price would have been against Spain in Spain's last match. I think Switzerland are a far better team than Croatia. Croatia had one of the worst expected goals difference of any team in the tournament, whereas I think Switzerland have proved over a long period of time their solid opposition. What we see with Switzerland is their players, they get far more out of their players than we see for their clubs. An example of that be, I think Granit Xhaka gave one of the best performances of his career against France, and Gerard and Shaqiri regularly outperforms the player we see in the Premier League. I think Spain may overcome them, but I think it might take them extra time. So Switzerland to avoid defeat is what I like here. So Switzerland win or draw, double chance at just over even money at the moment.
At 90 minutes, okay, sounds good. It's going to be tight. And that'll lead us nicely into, it's the marquee quarterfinal, there's no doubt about it, the Allianz Arena in Munich. They've long unbeaten runs, particularly Italy unbeaten in 32, Belgium unbeaten in 13. We're expecting this to be a classic, but what are you thinking?
Hopefully we get a better game than I think the Portugal v Belgium game, but I think we will. I think Portugal are one of the most negative teams in the tournament, whereas I think Italy under Roberto Mancini have played some superb football throughout. But I was taken by their performance against Austria, where I think Austria the better of the game for long periods. And if a couple of tight VAR decisions had got Austria's way, Austria could even have won the match. And I do think Italy could struggle for athleticism in midfield. I think between Axel Witsel and Yuri Tielemans, Belgium have one of the best midfield duos in the tournament. And even though De Bruyne and Hazard are absent, I think Belgium can be very competitive here, particularly Yana Carrasco, who'll come in for Hazard at a very good end of the season with Atletico Madrid, and I think is an excellent player. I think the mark has probably just moved a little bit too far Italy's way. And at Belgium's current price of just over 9-4, I think they represent a little bit of value.
Okay, lovely. So to wrap up Friday, the first two quarterfinals, what are the two best bets in the two matches?
So yes, Switzerland to avoid defeat in 90 minutes. So Switzerland winner draw double chance and Belgium to beat Italy in the 90 minutes.
Yeah, we've had a predictions table running on Off the Ball over the duration of the tournament, essentially. Myself against Jer, against Nathan, and I'm just looking at the latest scores. I'm on 20 points, Jer on 17, Nathan on 16. Myself and Jer both, we've picked three of this weekend's games, essentially. Myself and Jer going for Italy, Denmark and England to progress to the semi-finals. Nathan's going for Belgium, Denmark and England. So he thinks the Belgians will topple the Italians. Lads, I might get your predictions. Enda, looking at these games, I cannot wait for these games. Switzerland, Spain this evening at 5 o'clock. Belgium, Italy at 8 p.m. in Munich. And then tomorrow we have Czech Republic, Denmark. From 5 in Baku, and then Rome is the venue for Ukraine against England at 8 p.m. Only the English expats will be able to attend that. They can't travel over to Italy for this game. But who are your four semi-finalists, and how do you see these four games playing out?
Yeah, I think the Italy-Belgium game is obviously the pick of the tournament so far, and I think Italy are going to run all over them. If you look at Belgium's defence, that would scare me looking at the way that the Italy forwards play with that high-intensity press, and I just don't think Belgium will be able to handle that at all, and they were just very slow, very monotonous in the quarterfinal or in the last 16 clash. And I think Italy are the favourites for the tournament. I said it last week. I'm very glad now that I changed my prediction from France to Italy last week, so I'm all aboard the Italy train for that. In terms of Denmark, I think they're too strong. I think they'll go through, and the other two then, I think, you know, England, just it's disappointing that England actually come up against a team like Ukraine. I thought Sweden were going to do it. Unfortunately, that red card ruined that for me. And in the final game, you know, I'm not sure just yet who's going to come through that. I would lean towards Spain. I'd lean towards Spain, but it's a tough one. It's interesting that we mentioned, you know, harmony in the camp and harmony in the country. I was reading a piece on Switzerland, and apparently only 200,000 people in the German-speaking region of Switzerland watched the game because they're known as perennial bottlers. So I think that's very interesting how they're viewed. I think that would have changed having come through against France. So I think Spain will edge that game.
What about you, Kieran? Is it coming home?
Yes, no, I don't know, but I think I do think England will get through tomorrow. I mean, there's always the potential for it going horribly wrong, but I think Southgate will have refocused the players, particularly since Tuesday, giving them a kind of a day to really warm down and cool down and then just refocus. I think now we might see someone like a Jadon Sancho come into the side now that the move's complete, and add a little bit more sort of guile and technique there. So that'll be England for me. I think Belgium, Italy, I think it's a battle of defences, really. I think if you look at the difference between Chiellini and Bonucci at the back for Italy, and Denayer and Bonata for Belgium, and potentially De Bruyne out, I see Italy winning that one. They've got the kind of win behind them as well. I think Spain-Switzerland, I would go with Spain, because I think Switzerland is just going to have that adrenaline dump after that chaos of the French game, which was an amazing experience and might have just seen them peak. I'm not convinced about Spain more generally going forward, but the defensive partnership with Torres and Laporte would leave me a little bit cold. And then the last one, Czechs versus Danes. I think the Czechs are going to go through. I think Denmark had obviously been riding this wave, and it was great to see, and they're everyone's second team. But I do think that they were benefited by having all of the fixtures quite close together, so they were able to kind of keep that momentum up. I think the Czechs might have a little bit more. I was very impressed with them against the Netherlands as well. So, yeah, my four would be the Czechs, the Italians, the Spanish, and England.
Of course, England. I'm gonna go left field and say it's gonna be an Italy-Denmark final. I think this wave that the Danes are riding I think the Euro 92 feeling in the country is quite similar. Like, it's obviously the Eriksen thing is just transformed the whole tournament, and it's what we'll be talking about long after the tournament ends. But I just think this Danish team, Dahlberg is going to be the man who's finally going to rip apart John Stones, Harry Maguire, and Jordan Pickford. By the way, Jordan Pickford, what is he in an England jersey? He's something else in an England jersey compared to club level.
Well, it helps that you know, the best players get their shots completely off target when it comes to it.
He's got a sports psychologist on board, so I think that's actually helped him become a little less busy and sort of keep him laser focused. And look, I'm sure this will, you know, he'll chuck one in tomorrow and he'll completely make a mug of him. So.
Yeah, it's fair. Listen, lads, I can't wait for the football today and tomorrow. It's going to be excellent. But great stuff as always this morning. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Shane.
Cheers, lads.
Great stuff. Endicall and Kieran Bradley, our own members of Team OTB here, joining us on the Euro 2020 show this morning. As always, if you missed any of the show, and some great stuff from Eamon Dunphy as well, as per usual, we'll have Eamon again next Friday morning on the show, previewing the final, of course. That'll be our penultimate episode. We'll be back then on the Monday, the day after the final, for a review of the entire tournament, really, and especially the final. But missed any of the show, the full podcast will be up very, very shortly on the OTB Sports app, also on otbsports.com, and you can watch the full show back, youtube.com/offtheball, and see us all in perfect HD picture if you want. And we'll also be sure to have plenty of clips as well up on our Twitter and Instagram. That's @offtheball. Myself on Twitter @ShaneHannon01. I'll be back on Monday morning from 11 a.m. in the company of Damien Delaney and Nathan Murphy. So same time, same place, Monday morning. Enjoy the football at the weekend as well, and today and tomorrow. We have loads coming up across the weekend as well. John Duggan in the seat for OTB Football Saturday tomorrow from 2 to 3pm. The show from 1 to 8pm because of the Lions live commentary against the Emirates Lions. But it's Mark Lawrenson, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward joining John for OTB Football Saturday from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And then on Sunday, loads more football as well in Euros coverage. Joe Malloy in the hot seat from 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So we'll speak to you on Monday morning here on the Euro 2020 show. Have a good one.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 40k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetZetGo.ie.